Hi, and welcome to Webcams TV. As you can see, the surroundings have changed a little bit. We're here in Studio B, looking straight on to our audience, and we're going to be walking through a little bit about the PHP SDK today. With me today is Anton.
Hi.
Anton, welcome.
Thank you.
Anton is the PM for the PHP SDK, and pretty much the overall experience about PHP on Windows Azure.
Yes, end-to-end, including PHP runtime, ensuring that's available on Azure Cloud Services and to some extent on Azure websites, PHP client libraries, which allow you to access Azure resources from PHP, also documentation, which helps you actually do all of these things, and the commandlets, which simplify the deployment process and overall management of resources.
Awesome. Cool. So you're going to be taking us through a demo today about how to get your first app up and running. And I'm pretty sure this is the one that's directly right off the WindowsAzure.com website. Is that correct?
Yes. So I will show you how to create a simple taskless application. And we have a tutorial on the website called Website with Storage. You can actually go on the website and look for that tutorial if you want to see the code in more detail after the show.
Great. Great. So what we'll do is we'll jump over to the PHP Developer Center. And the PHP Developer Center is basically the one view as to how and go out and develop PHP applications on Windows Azure. So from here, you can go out and download the SDK, get the publishing tools, as well as go through a number of different samples as to how you would actually build out applications using, say, storage, getting up and running, deploying with Git, using SQL Azure, and all those other things. So Anton, do you want to take us away on starting off the demo?
Yes. So again, as I said, we're going to make a taskless application using the client libraries. Now, before I go into that, I just wanted to mention the client libraries allow you to access all the storage services in Windows Azure, which means you can access Azure Table Storage, you can access the Blob service, and the Queue service. Also, you can access the Service Bus, which is our messaging platform. Under that, we support topics and queues, these two APIs. And also, we have partial support for service runtime APIs and service management APIs, which allow you to basically perform programmatically what you consume the portal. I said it's partial, but you can actually see our work in progress as we are an open source project. And if you just go to github.com/windows-azure/azure-sdk-4-php, you can actually see all of our work as we are actually committing it. We are completely open source.
That's a nice mouthful. We'll make sure that we get the links in our description below the video here. So if you're checking out us on Channel 9, just scroll down a little bit and you'll have links off to all the content that we mentioned today.
Yes. So going to the Azure Developer Center, I guess the first question we'll have when we start an application like this is, how do we get the SDK? Now, on the left side, under the Common Tasks tab, we have an article called Download PHP SDK. Within that article, we've described the multiple ways of getting the SDK. As I mentioned, it is open source and on GitHub, so you can go and just fork our repo to get the SDK. But we do take dependencies on third-party libraries as we work with the open source community. And it is actually much easier to use a package manager, which will download both the SDK and all dependencies for it in one go. We support two popular package managers, Pear, which is the old and proven package manager, and Composer, which has recently been gaining traction. For this demo, I'll use Composer because I think, frankly, it's pretty cool. So before we start, you must have Git and PHP installed on your machine before you can actually replicate this. So I already have done this, and the first thing I have to do if I want to get the client libraries on my machine is create a file called composer.json, which is what I'm going to do right now, which file I'm going to use to specify that I want the client library in it. I'm going to use WebMatrix as my editor for editing this website because it is a really easy to use and fast little IDE that Microsoft has developed that works great with PHP because it also has PHP auto-completion.
Cool. So this composer.json file, what is that going to expose to Composer so we can actually use this SDK?
A couple of things. So as you see on the website where we have the sample Composer file, it basically makes a require statement for our SDK the star here is the version, and this will simply pull out the latest version directly out of GitHub, but also sets up a repositories directive which will allow Composer to pull our dependencies, which currently live in pair, directly from pair. Now, I must mention, you don't actually have to have pair installed. This is the beauty of Composer. Composer is going to do all this work for us in one go. And Composer is much easier to install than pair. This is one of the main reasons why I'm showing it. So the next step here is just to download composer.var, which is the executable for Composer, and save it into our project. So let me do this.
Now, is composer.var something that can be automated on the server side, or is this something that you need to actually pull all the dependencies before we go out and push our site to Windows Azure websites?
Currently, it is not automated on the server side, but we are looking into the possibility of doing that in the future, where once you deploy, you would not have to push any dependencies. You would only have to push the main core of your application and a file that specifies your dependencies, and then we will take that and pull the dependencies for you. At this present moment, we still have to deploy the dependencies manually, or that is just together with our application. Okay. So once I have these two things in my folder, I have composer.json, which is my specification of what I need, and I have composer.var, which is the executable. I can run a simple command, just php composer.var install. What this will do is this will start pulling all these resources directly from their individual sources.
So my understanding is because you have pair packages and you're using Composer, you would still have to set up, say, like an installation path on the server side when you go to include these pair files. Is that correct?
You would not actually have to set up an installation path. Deployment from here on is very easy. Composer will create a folder called vendor, as we'll see in a moment. And within this folder, it will put all the dependencies and to organize them by source. So the Windows Azure SDK is going to get its own folder, and our dependencies are going to get a separate folder where they're going to get organized. We're pretty much ready to deploy our application together with this folder, and it will just work. Currently, the only caveat is that because it is pulling it from Git, and we're going to do a Git deploy, we have to actually remove the Git-specific files from the files that Composer pulls in, so that this Git deploy works. And I won't do it right now. I'll do it just before we deploy, because it's a step that people tend to forget, and I think it's important to have it in the same frame of mind as deployment.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. Okay, so now we managed to get a library. As you can see, Composer succeeded. If you go into the vendor folder, you will see there is a folder called Microsoft, and then under it Windows Azure, which contains our client library. Composer has also created something else. It has created an autoloader so that when we start creating our application, we don't actually have to include all the different pieces one by one, but we can include this autoloader, which will automatically include all the necessary subpieces within that whole structure of dependencies that it pulled in. So in the interest of time, I'm going to take in a template. Because there is a lot of HTML involved, and this is not the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to take a number of files that I have prepared and only fill in the part that is related to the SDK, which I want to show you.
All right, so now that the files are have been copied over, what's the first step that we're going to take as we discover how to interact with the PHP SDK?
So the first thing we have to do is actually include the autoloader, as I mentioned. So let's go here and refresh our list. We're going to create an init file, which is going to execute all the steps necessary to get started with using the SDK, basically to bootstrap us. This is a file that we're going to include from every single subpart of the application. So the first step init is to require our autoloader. And after we're done with this, we can start by including namespaces. So we're going to need at least two namespaces, at the very least. We're going to need the namespace known as Services Builder. Now, Services Builder is a class capable of creating the wrappers for each Azure service. The wrappers, in turn, have methods for each single REST API call that Azure supports. The next class we need at the very least is the service exception class. And service exception defines the standard exception format that we're going to get on any kind of error when we make an Azure call. So now we're technically ready to instantiate our wrapper. But before we actually are able to successfully do that, we need the connection string. Our wrapper needs to know to what account it actually has to create, connect. So let's create a connection string. Now in this demo, we're going to use the Azure Table Storage. Azure Tables is a NoSQL or non-relational table store that is very similar, in fact, to MongoDB, which we also offer on Azure. So I'm going to go and log into the Azure portal, which I've already done here, and I'm going to show you how to create a storage account. It's very simple. All we have to do is press on new and storage, give it a name, specifying what location it will be located, and press create. Now, because this takes a while, I've already created it down here, and I'm simply going to open it up and use the credentials from it. There are two credentials that we need to enter to be able to use this. It's name and also it's key. So I'm going to open up the key and copy that. Now, connection strings have a specific format. You can look up the format by simply looking up Azure Connection, Azure Storage Connection String, or Azure Service Bus Connection String, and you will find it on the website. Of course, you will also find it in the tutorial, as mentioned.
So there's actually two great places where you can find connection strings for this. One, the Windows Azure PHP SDK README file has all of the different connection strings outlined as needed. There's also a really great resource site called connectionstrings.com, which has also gone out and started supporting Windows Azure connection strings. So you'd be able to find it from there. As well as there's plenty of blogs out on the web that are going to highlight how to create these connection strings. You'll probably find one on WA.com or WindowsAzure.com as well.
Yeah. Okay. So now, as I mentioned, we're ready to create our wrapper. Wrappers are by convention called REST proxies in the Windows Azure Client Libraries because they are, in fact, a proxy to the REST API. So let's create something called that we're going to call the table REST proxy. And to create that, we're going to invoke the services builder. As a singleton, so we're going to get a single instance. And we're going to say create table service. So now we are ready to create a wrapper, as I mentioned, that is going to allow us to call any of the REST API calls within the table service. We're going to call this the table REST proxy. And to instantiate it, I'm going to invoke the singleton instance of the services builder. We don't actually have to instantiate it. Within it, there is a method called create table service, which basically is going to take our connection string. Okay. So what this little file will do is it'll bootstrap us for accessing an Azure service. As I mentioned, we're going to include it from every other file. Now, before we can start, as you know, if you're doing SQL applications, the first thing you have to do is actually create a database. In this case, there isn't really a notion of a database. There's only a notion of a table. But I'm going to use the createDB file, where I'm going to insert some code to create a container where our data will live. So that by itself is also very easy and very simple. I'm going to use a try-catch block to make an Azure call, because I want to make sure that if there's an error, I do catch it. And I'm going to use the just created table REST proxy, which is included via the init file, and going to call the createTable method. What I have to specify here is only the name of the table.
So coming from the .NET world before as well, they have a create table if not exist. Does that exist in the PHP SDK as
not
well?
Not yet. This is something that we are looking into, but our philosophy so far with the SDK has been to create a thin REST wrapper. So all the metas that you see here map pretty much one-to-one with the REST API calls that Azure supports. Now, Azure does not have a REST API call for create if not exist, but we will probably in the future provide a method that will do some work for you and check if the table exists before it creates it.
Cool.
So we should be able to catch a service exception called E. And we're not going to do much on it. We're just simply going to echo the code that we get out of it and also echo the message. Just so that we have an idea of what went wrong if something does go wrong. Now, CreateDB will be the first thing we'll call from our application. Otherwise, we'll get an error. Once we do this, we should be able to actually make a read out of the table. So let's create an index file where we're going to show all the to-do items in the task list and also provide a form to create new items. Now, as you see in this template, I've already pre-populated this with some HTML that shows you the header, also has a form for adding new items at the bottom, but it's missing the crucial piece, which is accessing the Azure table storage. What we're going to do in the index is make a query and read all the available items. So again, to do that, we're going to use the table REST proxy, and we're going to use the method query entities. Now, this method is able to take a filter and take an actual query. We will not do it just yet. What we'll do right now is only pass in the name of the table where we're storing our data, and this will retrieve all the entities within it automatically. So before I can iterate on them, I must say the result file that I get out of it does not actually contain the entities. The entities must be acquired by calling getEntities on the result. Now, in the interest of time, I've already filled in this from the template. So once we get entities, what we're able to do is iterate on them directly. They are effectively an array that we can read step by step. And in this case, what I'm doing is that I'm reading each property value from the array one by one. Now, being a NoSQL database, Azure tables don't actually have a schema per se. So as you see, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to read a bunch of property values.
So what we have now is a collection of properties, correct? So what we'll need to do is go through and iterate through each row. And rows within table storage could be jagged rows, right?
Yes,
it's almost
correct.
Like an array in a sense.
Correct. So being a NoSQL database, Azure table storage doesn't really have a schema. And each row is just a property bag. And each property bag can contain a different number of entities, not to mention that they can be entities of different types. In our case, we are going to have some structure to it. And we are going to have entities of the same type and the same number of entities per row. But I'll go into more detail a little bit later as to how we can insert them and how you can actually make them be just a different set on every row. So in this case, I'm going to go entity by entity. And for each entity, I'm going to get the property value and just pass in the name. It is just a generic method, get property value, because again, these are just properties and they can be really anything. We have a capability here in our task list to mark items as complete. And for that, I'm going to check whether the value of the complete property is false. Now, properties do have types. So this, in this case, is actually a Boolean type property. Mm-hmm. And as you see, depending on the state of the completion state of the item, we're going to either allow this to be marked as complete or to be unmarked as complete. To do so, we're going to use a new file called markItem, and to it, we're going to pass two things. Now, these two things, which are actually the partition key and the row key, make up the primary key of a any Azure row.
So that's the partition key, row key would be that index point, if you're thinking in relational database terms.
So for the last item here, we're going to do something slightly different. We have the capability to mark items as complete or to unmark them as complete in our task list. And to do so, well, for the for, for, for starters, we actually have to check whether the item is complete or not. In this case, as you see, we just have this little check here. This is a different type of property. It is a Boolean as compared to these, but we can just print out which are just strings. Now, what's more important is that the actual marking or unmarking will be done by the markItem.php file. And that needs to know the exact identifier of the entity that we're going to refer to. In SQL tables, we have the primary key, but in Azure Table Storage, we actually need two things. They're known as the partition key and the role key. Only both of them together make up an actual primary key that can identify an entity uniquely. Now, just a word on them. The role key does identify, as you know, as expected, what row this is from the whole table. But the partition key is something that is used for sharding. It allows you to split the table into multiple pieces so that within each piece, access is faster. The thing is that row keys can be duplicated across partition keys, hence why we need to provide both to uniquely identify an item. And the same applies for the delete item link, which will allow you to delete the to-do item, which is down here. Again, we have to pass both of these for each entity so that the delete link will work properly. Okay, great. Basically, what we have right now is we have a list of items on our task list that people can see what's available. And the last thing in the file is the form, as I showed you before, that allows you to add a new to-do item. Now, logically, we should go on and insert the code for the addItem.php file. But let's just deploy this right now so we have a visual idea of where we've gone so far and what we have already. So to do this, the first thing we have to do is actually create a new website in the Azure portal, which is going to contain our application. So let's go back to the portal and create a new website. We'll call it Webcams TV.
I can't believe that's available.
It is. Oh my god. It is crazy. Webcams TV. Click create. And as you see, it's super fast. It just got created. Now, we're going to use Git to deploy our website. To do this, we have to first enable it. So let's open up Webcams TV and our websites. There it is. It's a good first step. It's always good to reset the deployment credentials and set the password that we want for it. I'm going to use a very simple password here. Okay. And then we have to actually enable Git publishing. So we click on Set Git Publishing.
So while this is spinning up, we actually did a episode a little bit ago, which we showed off the CLI tools. So this shows a nice contrast as to how you can go and set up Git deployment out in the portal. So thanks for taking us through this.
And in this case, I'm not going to use any CLI tools at all. As I said, the only two prerequisites we need is just Git and PHP, and that's the beauty of it. That means that we can easily do this on any platform, and we can certainly do this with the CLI tools, but we can do it without installing anything. It's even lighter. So the Git repository that we can deploy to was just created, and now what we have to do is go on in our local folder where our application is and create the Git repository there. So as I mentioned before we do this, we have to make one little adjustment. Composer has pulled in the libraries directly from, especially the Windows Azure SDK, directly from GitHub, and that itself is a Git repository. If we try to deploy this directly, it won't actually deploy. We do have to go and open up the vendor folder where Composer put the dependencies, then find the Windows Azure SDK within it, and remove all Git-specific files, which in this case are the .git, .git attributes, and .gitignore. This is a temporary fix that is hopefully something that we'll fix soon. So with that removed, I can go ahead and proceed with the steps of creating a repository out of the folder where my application resides. So I'm simply going to initialize the Git repo, going to add all the files within it, and make a commit. And now, to be able to actually deploy, I have to add a remote for the repository where Windows Azure will accept our code. So here is the URL and the command to add this remote. Now that this is done, I can write git push Azure master at any point in time to deploy my application to Azure. It's going to ask me for my password. And in no time we're done. As you can see, the portal automatically refreshed in the background and showing us our deployment currently being processed. It's only going to take seconds for this to complete, so we can actually just wait here. There it is. Now, as I said, if we just try to open up our website, we'll get an error because we haven't created our table yet. So we use the browse button to get the URL of our website, which is just webcamstv.azurewebsites.com. And the first thing we have to do is actually launch the createDB page so that we create the table within our database. Otherwise, we're going to get an error. Now, createDB was not designed to actually show anything. So as long as it shows a blank screen, that means we've actually successfully created the table within Azure Table Storage.
Just to interrupt here for a second, If we were creating an application that's a real-world scenario, we want to go and deploy this out on a regular basis, but we might be removing our storage account. Are the transactions against storage, like if I was to call create table multiple times in a row, is it an idempotent transaction? Like, would you be able to call it multiple times without receiving the error back? Or would you actually receive an error?
You should receive an exception if you call it a second time. You can simply make it so that you process the exception if the exception is it's already created.
So technically,
we could just have
createDB as an include on our page if we wanted to make sure that that process was getting run all the time.
Yes.
Cool.
However, I generally do not recommend this. I think that any kind of setup operation should be performed once, and you can automate them via script. But running it on every single page is going to be too much overhead of having an extra call.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of overhead to reach out to table storage and wait for that on every call.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's try to launch our index. So the template that I actually use to deploy this website does have the add item method already implemented. So let's just go ahead and add an item to see how that is going to work out. Just say get the milk, the groceries category, and put it at a random day, let's say 10, 10, 2012. Okay, so as you can see, we are able to add items and they properly get recorded. We don't know how this adding works yet because we haven't looked at the code, but our read code is apparently being able to read from the Azure Table Storage property. Let's add one more item. Soy milk is so good.
I'm a big fan of chocolate milk.
We can add it later just for you. All right. So the big question right now is, how does this little form work? Let's go back to WebMatrix and open the addItem.php. So we are using some different namespaces here, which is important to note. We're using a namespace which defines the structure of an entity because we're going to at first create an entity and insert our data in it. And we're also using the EDM type namespace. That namespace defines all the data types that are available for properties in Azure tables. We have 8 data types that we support, and you can find them all online. So the process starts with creating a new entity, which is going to be blank in the beginning. And then we first have to set its partition key. As I mentioned, the partition key is basically a sharding key. We have to give it a name. It will not be inserted automatically. We also have to set the row key. And again, this has to be unique. So in our case, we're sort of hacking this together by using just a time as a row key. That's definitely going to be unique. But a better row key is recommended for an actual production application. So these two properties, the partition key and the row key, are part of 3 required properties that will exist in every Azure entity. The third one is the timestamp. in general, an entity can hold up to 255 different properties. But because three are reserved, there's only 252 which are available for plugging in user data. So going back to that user data, the next thing is we are simply going to create a couple properties and insert the data that we passed in from the form. The first one is just a name, so that's the first thing we have in the form. And we're going to give it a type string and pass in the value that we got. We're going to also do this for category and for date, and for simplicity's sake, we're going to use the string data type for all of them, except for complete, which must be a Boolean because we must be able to easily tell whether that's a true or false. So the next step after we have created this entity model is to make an insert operation and actually send this into Azure Table Storage where it'll be stored. And it's again very simple. We're simply going to make a call to insert entity. We're going to pass in the name of the table that we're using and the entity, and that is going to do it all. And then we process our exception. Okay, let's go back to our running to-do application. The next feature we're going to take a look at is the mark complete or unmark complete feature. So let's just see how that works. If we click on mark complete on any item, it's going to get marked and the link changes to an unmark complete. So how does that work? As you can probably suspect, this is a little bit more complicated because it has to read an item and then modify it. So the first thing we're going to do to accomplish this task is do a query. Now, we are going to query the tasks table, but we must make an actual query statement to get only the entity that was selected in this case. So as you can see here, we have a little expression. Azure Tables supports SQL 92 and linked style expressions for accomplishing these queries. It is a very simple query in this case. We're simply saying that we want an entity with a particular partition key and row key, which is basically its primary key. We'll select that and we can perform operations on it. So once we do this query, we're going to again use getEntities to retrieve the results of the query. And in this case, we're rather dumbly going to assume that we only receive one item and use that. That is good enough for the sample because our conditions are such that we're not going to receive more than one result. And because we are specifying something directly by a partition and a row key, which is the primary key. But as a best practice, it is better to actually enumerate the results, even when we expect a single result. So to modify the property, we're going to call the setPropertyValue method on the entity. We're going to specify exactly which property within it we want to change, and then the value. This is just a ternary operation, which depending on the state of the complete status which we pass in when we call this mark item file, based on it, it is going to set it as true or false. Now once we're then modifying the entity, we can simply call update entity back on the REST proxy and pass in that entity to make the update operation complete. Cool. And the last thing we're going to take a look at is the delete function. Let's see if that works. Let's get rid of the bad milk. Cool. Okay, so delete is a very, very simple operation because all it takes is, again, the primary key and the row key, and it performs a delete. As you can tell, it is a single call. All right, and this is basically the end of our demo.
Great. Thanks for running through this demo. So just to kind of reiterate over what we did here is we took the My To-Do list off of the WindowsAzure.com site. So that will be available at github.com/WindowsAzure/AzureContent, I believe. We'll get a link below here so you can go out and try out that sample. But I'd really like to thank you for coming out on the show today and running us through going and using the PHP SDK to interact with table storage.
Yeah, no, the pleasure was entirely mine. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for joining us. And hopefully we'll see you here next time on Webcamps TV.